Good evening and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Respect and education is what you get from the Progressive Radio Network and Warrior Connection. Well, today we're going to continue on our education process and how do we take care of ourselves and how do we help the vets, how do we help the families. Today we have Dr. Jim Dolan, and he is incredible. When I read his background and talking to his staff members, can't ask for anything better. Jim, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Thanks, Doug. Glad to be on with you.
Hey, Denise, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Jim, this is Major Denise Nichols, retired nurse, U.S. Air Force, and one of the strongest veteran advocates in our nation. So you guys got a lot to help each other.
Hi, Denise. How are you?
Hello there, and thank you, Doug.
Yeah. Ray, are you with
actually,
us today?
I'm going to have to correct you both. I am, although I'd love to be called a doctor, I am not a physician. I'm not a medical doctor. I just happen to have the benefit of being surrounded by some of the best.
Okay, well, we'll just go to Jim then. Ray, are you with us by chance?
I am, Doug. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim, this is Ray Clark. He's the author of The Hidden War about PTSD and everything. So, Jim, tell us a little bit about the Lowers Foundation and the Healer Warrior Initiative and everything else, and let's see where we can go to educate our veterans and ourselves.
Okay. Well, first of all, welcome, Ray. Nice to meet
you
by phone.
Dr. Dolan, thank you.
You bet. I had a chance to just briefly go over your website, The Never Ending War, and I really appreciate what you've done and what you're sharing.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate what you're doing, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Doug, I'll just give you a brief synopsis. But rather than talk about me, let me talk to you about what we focus on, and then we can get into more detail on my background and how I got involved. The thing we focus on most and first is the number 22. There are 22 veterans a day committing suicide needlessly, and we think it's in large part because of the way that they've been treated when they come back. We have a pledge that we ask people to sign whenever we go out into the community, when we do outreach, when we do stand-downs. We go to veteran-sponsored events and work in the community. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to read that pledge because I think it'll set the tone for our conversation.
Please do, sir.
The pledge reads as follows. I, and the person signs their name, I solemnly pledge before God and country to do everything in my power to prevent veteran suicide and to persuade others to take and honor this same solemn pledge. So help me God. And
that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
That's exactly why Dr. Jurasek, one of our partners, when he wrote it, that's exactly what he wanted it to be. He wanted it to be simple, impactful, and powerful, because we believe that everything begins with a pledge or with a commitment, and we're committed to reducing the number of veteran suicides because none of the things that any one of us says or does or any of the programs inside or outside of the VA are worth a damn if the person is not alive. So
you
our
know,
first
as you know, we lost one of our co-hosts and best friends of the three of us to suicide here in March after everything failed all the way around. And no matter what we could do because of his total feeling of total abandonment by those that were responsible, we couldn't save them. And that's, for us, it's painfully painful, 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 painful.
Well, I'm sorry to hear of your loss, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard this story from veterans and veteran family members. It's just it's tragic. We work with a group. We all know who Gold Star families are and Gold Star moms. We work with a group, a subset of the Gold Star moms called the One and Onlys. These are moms who have lost their one and only son or daughter to battle. And a large number of them have lost their one and only to suicide. And it's time to put an end to it. So that's what motivates us. That's what drives us.
Awesome.
And that simple pledge keeps us focused on what we believe is the first thing that has to take place, and that's to keep people in the game, to keep them alive long enough for hope to spring and for them to find their way.
Doug, can I say something real quick? I was just talking to a group of healthcare workers a few minutes ago, actually, and what I told them was that every time a soldier dies, on or off the battlefield, the enemy smiles. And every time a guy gives it up and takes his life, not only does he have tremendous collateral damage around him, but also, and it hurts the whole military, but the enemy is smiling about it, too, because they've won. And it just behooves each of us to not do it. Find other some kind of source and try to find a way out of this thing, because it's a shame to lose so many good warriors in this country.
Well, Ray, I'll just tell you two things from what you were saying. One is the collateral damage is just incredible. The number of people who are affected by the suicide of a loved one, it's not only widespread, but it becomes generational. The other thing you mentioned was that the enemy smiles, and we have a hard time determining who the enemy really is. You know, when you first said enemy, my first thought obviously were the people we're combating. But we're combating a whole host of enemies here, home side, who are either out of sheer ignorance or absolute stubbornness are standing in the way of methods that can work to save people like the friend that you guys just lost. This is not new. What war trauma or battle fatigue, shell shock, combat stress, all the names it's been called before it was called PTSD is not new. We've been doing this stuff to each other, killing and dying for thousands of years. And so what we've done is we've stopped looking forward to determine what the next best remedy or the next best pill is, and we've started looking back to see what other cultures, other civilizations, other societies have done to welcome back their warriors and to help them reintegrate into family life.
You know, I think the most critical part about this thing, and this is, I know, what Paul Lyons and the other ones we've dealt with, and Denise and I and Ray have done too many suicide interventions, much less fighting it off ourselves, is the abandonment by the leaders of all of the warriors is what hurts so incredibly much. And when you go for help and you anticipate getting the help, all they want to do is drug you, or push you off in the corner. And that's why when I read about your program, I've got to go, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah. Well, there is, and we believe that it starts with redefining everything about this. When you start calling combat stress, battle fatigue, shell shock, or trauma itself, when you start calling it a mental illness, you're taking people down a road that has one end to it because of the way that the medical establishment, especially within the VA, is structured. We do not believe that post-traumatic stress disorder is a mental illness. We believe it's a wound, and a wound that can be healed. We have one of the doctors we work with runs the Institute for Traumatic Stress, and he defines post-traumatic stress as a normal reaction to abnormal events. And if I can, I'll give you a great example. If any one of us, we've all lost loved ones, and we just spoke about one who we lost to suicide. If you were to go into a funeral parlor or a wake, and you were to see the family members, the loved ones there, they would be distraught, they would be crying, they would be beside themselves, unable to focus, unable to function. And if you were to take a snapshot of that and use the diagnostic and statistical manual that the mental health establishment uses, you would classify them by their symptoms as having a mental illness. They do not have a mental illness. What they have is trauma.
Right.
And if you can distinguish between trauma and mental illness, you can begin to help the person process that trauma naturally in the same way that each one of us has processed the loss of a loved one.
That's true. I think
we stopped calling it a mental illness. Because the problem there is that when you call it a mental illness, you put the person in the hands of the mental health or the behavioral health community, and most often they have one bag and one trick in that bag, and it usually is pharmaceuticals.
And those pharmaceuticals, all they do is put the person into a catch-22 because the guy's flustered and frustrated, so they're using alcohol and street drugs. They're taking the pharmaceuticals, and they're matching up with their pain meds that they need to get by every day, their prescription meds. And you've got a cocktail that's doing nothing but killing the vet.
You're absolutely
well,
right.
That, they're drinking, too, you know, so that even throws into a worse situation because they're still trying to self-medicate themselves, and that just creates more problems for them.
Yeah, I'll tell you, though, Ray, I'd much rather have them drinking.
With drugs. I'm talking with drugs.
Yeah.
So when you combine all that together, a cocktail of medications, and then they're drinking on top of that, you've got a deadly combination.
No, it's absolutely disastrous. There's no question about that. But in World War II, my dad was in the Army Air Corps, flew cargo planes, was shot down, and, you know, their remedy coming back was, and plus they had time to decompress. These guys would be on ships for weeks at a time smoking cigarettes and telling stories and had an opportunity to decompress. You know, now we have a kid in Afghanistan one day, and 48 hours later, he's in his bed at home trying to make that adjustment. It's just too damn fast. There's no way that can work.
That happened to me, and it happened to Ray, and it happened to Denise, Jim.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. You go through how many weeks of basic training?
Well, usually 8, I think. 10.
Yeah.
8 or 10, whatever it was. I don't remember. That was Vietnam era.
Seemed like a
Denise,
long time to me.
How about how many weeks of basic training for you, Denise?
Well, it was medical, so what? That's a long time ago. I was sitting there trying to think of my answer. Probably 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, it's even longer now, depending on you know what you're going to be doing once you're deployed. But imagine taking weeks upon weeks to get somebody ready for combat, to get them ready for battle, and then when they come back, you snap your fingers and tell them to get over with. It just doesn't work that way. I alluded to the fact that we've been looking at other cultures, other civilizations, other societies. They were doing it right. As primitive as we think our ancestors were, all the way back to the Greeks, with hippotherapy, that equine therapy, the Greeks would take a fellow who came back from battle, and it was usually men, and if he was sullen and withdrawn, they would put him on a bouncy horse. They'd send him out into the country, they'd feed him, they'd give him plenty of rest, and they'd have him ride and care for this horse. If he was hyperactive, hypervigilant, if he couldn't settle down, they'd do the same thing. They'd send him out in the country, feed him, give him plenty of rest, and they'd put him on a slumbering horse. And there was a connection between horses. There are certain animals that have a human connection. Dogs are one as companion and service animals. Horses are another. And the Greeks knew that. They knew that these guys needed rest. They needed to be able to sleep because that's where the body and the mind repairs itself. Now we give these guys Ambien, and they're not sleeping well. They're knocked out, but they don't get the kind of sleep that allows their body and their mind to replenish itself and to repair itself.
Dr. Bart Billings, I guess you know him real well, Jim. He told us in a previous radio show that he was finding out 56% of those guys on active duty, that's the only way they're getting to sleep is on Ambien, and then they've got all this other stuff is handed out like candy.
Oh, he tells it straight, man. In the movie, I sent you an email, Doug, with a couple of, if you can post it on your website and let other people know, there's several movies that we highly recommend. The one that he and I appear in is a documentary by the Citizens Commission for Human Rights called The Hidden Enemy. And you may have talked about it. They've done a great job of identifying the problem. The problem is that we're medicating these guys for mental illnesses when we should be treating them holistically for trauma. I'll give you a quick story, and I don't mean to
No.
To dominate the conversation or lecture, but there's just so we're just so frustrated with the sheer ignorance and deliberate stubbornness on the part of the medical community, especially the mental health providers, to just do some homework. The American Indians had a great model. They would not allow a warrior to return to the village without going with the elders on a hunt. And they would go out for weeks at a time. And they would be out getting fresh air. It gave them an opportunity to literally take off their war paint, their war feathers. They'd be out exercising and hunting. They'd be eating well. And they would be sharing stories with the elders who had also been in battle. And then at a point certain, they would return them to the village with ceremony and ritual and honor to allow them to transition from being a warrior to being a husband, a son, an uncle, someone who could reintegrate into the village naturally.
We were just all tossed back in like the kids are tossed back in today without anything. Less than 24 hours after your last combat mission. I mean, it's ludicrous. Another problem I think that's happened, and I have to compare from what we did when Vietnam era, when I first went over, and Ray and I were in Nam, Denise was back here treating him at Wilford Hospital. But then went to Desert Storm, the communications changed. I mean, in Vietnam, we were lucky if we could get a letter, you know, or a tape on a reel-to-reel tape recorder back and forth. Desert Storm was a little bit better, but now they got almost instant communication, so all these soldiers are going to war, and they're in communications back with their family, having to deal with a family crisis this half time that they're having to deal with this guy shooting at their ass.
Oh, they're living in two worlds at the same time, and you can't do that. One, it doesn't help to foster the completion of the mission because you don't have guys focused. And two, it adds additional stress both on them and on the family. And it just seems that the folks that are running the show are not the ones who got their fingers dirty. They're not. It does not seem to me that folks like you are in a position to influence the way that veterans now are being treated. Otherwise, you would do it completely different. You'd give them time to decompress. The last thing you would do is give them these psychotropic drugs. And Dr. Billings, Bart, is a strong advocate. In fact, he tells a story about being at a seminar where one of the top psychiatrists in the military was talking about how they treat veterans. And he finished his presentation, and Billings stood up and asked him a question. He said, "Tell me how many, what percentage of the veterans that you see are being prescribed psychotropic drugs?" And the presenter said, "Well, we only see the tough cases." And Billings said, "We all see tough cases. What's the percentage?" And the guy said, 98%.
That's a Band-Aid theory. You know, I was reading in the book of Numbers in the Bible one time, I think it was chapter 20 or something, but the Israelites, even in the ancient Israelites, when they were in battle, and it said that anybody had killed anyone or carried a dead body, they had to leave the camp for 7 days. They had to eat, sleep, talk to their buddies, everything else. And on the seventh day, they had to wash their clothes, their armor, their bodies, everything. All the blood and everything was left. And then they could come back in the camp as a new person. And that was a general idea. What you've been talking about, the Indians and different ones, they figured that thing out on their own. And
yeah,
God had dealt with post-traumatic stress for a long time before we came along.
Well, you know, the first traumatic brain injury was Abel.
Right,
you
exactly.
Thousands of years ago, if you got hit in the head with a rock, you suffered a traumatic brain injury. If you did battle, took someone's life, or had others' lives taken in front of you, you experienced traumatic stress. It's not changed. The sad thing, Ray, is that if you quote the Bible or you tell people that occurred, they look at it as superstition.
Right.
And it's nothing of the kind. It's a method to process with ceremony and ritual so that you are taking off the armor, you're taking off the remnant of battle, and you're putting on new clothes so that you can do battle at home.
So
you know what your friend went through, and I don't presume to know exactly what he went through, but from all of our experience, what he went through was he had maxed out. He had reached his capacity of dealing with stress. It's the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. They use the straw as an analogy because it's so light. It doesn't have to be a major traumatic event in order for somebody to turn to suicide. It can be that last straw. And so what we try and do is treat traumatic stress as a physiological wound. And if you treat the body, mind, heart, and spirit as a unit, as a system, and you can bring down stress, if you can give the person some reserve, they can begin to find hope, and those and the straws of stress, those little things that might tip them over the edge, they can handle. When somebody's maxed out, when they've reached their limit, when they have no reserve, any little thing can tip them over. So we start with the body, because we believe trauma resides in the body. And if you can get people, if you can get their body to calm down a little bit, and we use acupuncture, meditation, massage therapy, we use all of the natural means possible to give them that reserve, to give them the hope, to get them feeling better physically so that they can begin to act better emotionally. But it's working.
That's good.
Have you read the brochure?
I just found a great resource at first glance
here, but I was trying to come up with the equine therapy of going out with the horses, and just found a beautiful website with more than that on it. And I want to mention it to our veterans out there and the veteran families. It's called Operation We Are Here, and all that runs together, all small cap, OperationWeAreHere.com. It is a website I had not seen before, but they have just unbelievably put together a good website here of resources that are available to veterans. The military dogs, music therapy, poems, writing, the whole bit, and service dogs, and it goes on and on. So they've got a good resource website here with links to other websites and groups that are there to help the veteran. So, again, that's OperationWeAreHere.com.
And do you know where, are you on the website now, where are they located?
Well, that's what I'm looking at. I just happened to find it because I wanted to mention some of the horse therapy groups that I've heard about and just put that in and came up. And let's see, it looks like their board of directors people are all over the country, it looks like, and they have some chaplains, church-affiliated people. So it looks like it's a group of people from across the country that have come together, you know, identified the need and got it started.
Great. Well, it looks like it's also, I'm on the site now, it looks like it's a faith-based organization too, and we're finding that we work with a two-star general, General Mukiyama. He's the first Japanese-American to command a division. And he started an organization called Military Outreach Chicago, where he wanted to train churches, and it could be churches, synagogues. It's non-denominational, and he's now expanded his division, his vision rather, and he's changed the name to Military Outreach USA. His goal was 500 churches in the Chicagoland area. It's now become 35,000 churches nationwide. And he's the kind of guy that can get it done. And he's addressing the issue of moral injury. what you were talking about, Ray, of somebody taking someone's life or carrying a dead body, those are moral injuries that that need to be healed. And the ceremony and the ritual that you quoted from the Bible is a process. And the problem we're finding is that these drugs that the guys are being given, and I know that a lot of your listeners have either been told they should be on drugs, have tried some of them, and I mean psychotropic drugs, the pharmaceutical brands, or they're currently on them. We're not making judgments on people who have tried them, because that's the standard of care today. That's the first thing that the psychiatric community goes to. But what we're finding is that these drugs lock that person in place. It actually retards their ability to process trauma. So what Denise just talked about with the equine therapy is a way to naturally process or release the trauma. We have a great organization up here in Northern Illinois called Brave Hearts, and it's an equine therapy program. And it may be accessible to some of the folks in your listening area. But I would encourage anyone, a family member, a veteran who's struggling, to find people in their community who know about natural ways of healing, whether it's a chiropractor, an acupuncturist, massage therapist, you name it, and seek these people out, because they will provide veterans and their family members with these natural alternatives. And we're committed to making sure that people know that there are ways that they can heal.
Well, both Denise and I were lucky enough to, some years ago, we went down to Texas with Dr. Ray and Dr. Johnson, and we had the nutritional supplementation, and then we did some of the stuff where we were, it was a sauna, but it was all medically controlled and all this stuff, to where we were cleaning the toxins out and rejuvenating the medical nutrition that we have, because what we've all learned, what we're seeing, is the nutritional ability of the body, or the ability of the body to process nutrition, is damaged. The same thing with the O2 and the CO2 removal, it's all damaged. And then your pain levels get totally out of control, and when the pain levels got out of control, your stress gets out of control, and you don't sleep, and then you get back, and the cycle goes a nightmare. And for me, I know the myofascial relief and the acupuncture are just like, wow.
Yeah, no, it works. That's the amazing thing. It actually works. You're right about nutrition. The only way that you can get the proper amino acids for good brain function are from your gut. So if people have issues and you know, you guys were exposed to it. You were exposed to toxins, Agent Orange. The guys in Iraq and Afghanistan have been exposed to burn pits. They've absorbed the place is a crap hole. These guys are not, you know, they're not living in livable conditions. They're living in dirt. And especially in Iraq and Afghanistan, with all the dust flying, these burn pits are throwing the toxins into the air. And unlike here in Illinois, where you can get a good windy day and the smoke and toxins will waft away, there they get kicked up with the dust and they come back down into the ground, onto the ground, and they get recycled. So these guys are exposed to all kinds of toxins and have issues with either not getting the nutrition that they need or not being able to absorb it, malabsorption, where they're, even if they're getting good nutrition, it's just running through their bodies. So nutrition is a big part of what we advocate. We use herbs, supplements. You mentioned acupuncture. That's one of the first things that we do to bring down pain. Dr. Jurasek, who's been practicing acupuncture for the last 30 years, presented a paper where he could demonstrate that by reducing the level of physical pain, there was a corresponding reduction in the level of PTSD symptoms. Because it's a systems problem. The system, guys and gals, systems are overwhelmed. And if you can reduce physical pain, you can bring down the level of PTSD symptoms, you can give them that reserve to deal with the everyday stresses of life.
You know, one of the things, and Ray, you've been bringing this all up, and we've talked about this over and over again, we got an entirely different group of kids today coming in and out of the military than those of us who went to Vietnam, came in and came out, than those that went to Desert Storm and came and came out. And I suspect it's going to be an entirely different group that comes in the future because, I mean, Ray, you made mention this the other day when you were at Camp Lejeune. They were talking about the walls, and yeah. These guys got all these problems showing up, and they haven't even been to combat yet.
Right. That's true. And, you know, if you really look at it, they all had these walls. They asked them to draw a picture of what was in their minds, and all of them had drawn different types of walls. And they couldn't see around it. They couldn't see over it. All they could see is this wall. And what we try to explain to them, we go through this brochure that we created, and as combat veterans who have come pretty much out of post-traumatic stress, where we've learned how to cope with it and deal with it and live with it, and without a whole lot of medications either. But we were telling them about that, about how you draw a line between your traumas and today, and how you move on, and the wall is suddenly behind you. But what we're finding out, Doug, is that there's been so much divorce and people self-medicating since Vietnam, and their children went to the Gulf War. I think the Vietnam veterans is like 93% divorce rate. The Gulf War veterans have got close to a 90% divorce rate. And those children, their children, are coming to the military now, and they have all the classic signs of post-trauma. And they wonder, where'd they get it from? They'd never been deployed. Well, they've grown up in a battlefield. Multiple marriages, multiple families, thrown here, thrown there, molested, beat up, everything else. And so they're coming into the military with post-traumatic stress. And so you have to include those and deal with them because I think they said 60% of those committing suicide have never been deployed. And they had 59 at Camp Lejeune on suicide watch. That's just unheard of.
Yeah. Well, Ray, what you're describing is trauma.
Yeah, trauma. Different trauma, forms of it, but it's trauma.
Trauma from childhood, trauma from divorce or abuse.
Yeah.
And then you do deploy them. And they're dealing with the trauma of loss and the trauma of doing battle, the trauma of taking someone else's life. The guys you're describing who haven't yet been deployed are contemplating what it's going to be like once they're deployed, and that can be traumatic and trigger, you know, past trauma. So
yeah.
It really is, I mean, it just is amazing to us how the VA and the military doesn't even listen to their own language. When they talk about post-traumatic stress and then immediately call it a mental illness,
right.
Well, if you're going to call it traumatic stress, why not focus on trauma and help people to process the trauma naturally? A lot of the guys that you're talking about pre-deployment are also being given medication.
They are, yeah. And here they're dealing with those past traumas. It was like that wall that they couldn't see around it, and they didn't even have a future. That's the people that are prone to suicide. But when we gave them this brochure and we went through it with them, it was like when you draw that line in the sand between yesterday's trauma and hurt and pain and today, suddenly the wall is moved behind you, and now you've got a clear sailing. Where do you want to go from here? And they're able to get a goal. They're able to focus on the goal. They're able to push forward. That brochure, as simple as it is, it was written by combat veterans, and they have come out of it. And they're like, okay, well, follow us. We'll lead you out. And it's really making a difference. The VA is using it, and a lot of VAs, the vet centers are using it. We've had many organizations that are using it because they're struggling to find what is going on, and, you know, they need to listen to this program more because I believe they could really find out what is going on and they'd be able to help these guys so much better.
One of the other things, too, that bothers me and everything else, and when we talk about this moral injury that you've already mentioned, the moral injury for me is so deep because we're led to believe one thing, then we find out something entirely different from what we've been led to believe, then we find out we were lied to, then we're told that we can come out of this healthy, and then we find out we're all sick because of the toxic exposures. Then they tell us the toxic exposures didn't happen. Then you come back and you can't get the medical care that you need. And then it comes back around, yay, rah, team, you did just the perfect thing, and you went over there and you got the enemy, and they were coming after us, and all of a sudden you're realizing this is a whole bunch of hooey. I mean, how do we get through this, and how do we get by that?
Well, it's betrayal.
It is.
Yeah. That's what it is. And, you talk about people being stabbed in the back by people you've trusted or loved and those who you've looked up to, those in authority. It's the same thing that happens with sexual trauma in children. The major issue that they have is the betrayal, that someone they trusted, someone they loved, someone they cared for, took advantage of them and broke that trust.
Right.
But again, it goes back to, and for, I hope the people in the audience are listening to what Ray just said. That line that you talked about drawing is exactly the visual that you have to give people in order to restore their hope. You have to tell them by example, and I love the fact that it's been written by combat veterans, and I would love to get a copy of it, Ray, if we could. Doug's got my email address.
Okay.
I'd love to take a look at it.
Well, you can go on my website, Dr. Dolan, or my website, theneverendingwar.com. If you look at my homepage and scroll it down, you'll see the brochure. You can print one off. So that's what it is.
I'm on the page now, and it says PTSD brochure. Is that it?
That's it. Click on it. It comes right out.
Got it.
It's a two-paged, threefold brochure. Making a difference.
Okay. We need to repeat these websites. Okay, very slowly, and we need to get them on the archives. So if y'all would repeat those websites that you've mentioned so far.
Well, my website is www.theneverendingwar.com, and it's under L.M. Clark. If you go on my website and you look on the homepage, if you scroll down, you'll see a brochure, PTSD brochure, or PTS. If you click on it, it'll open it up, and then you can print one off, and you can give it to anyone who's dealing with trauma. Let me say this real quick. When you go into combat or wherever you're going in third world countries, a lot of times, God gave us a conscience, each one of us. It's like a moral compass, and we have to put that compass on hold because we do things that are totally against everything we've ever done. Well, when you come back home, that conscience will show up again, and you feel dirty, and you feel betrayed, and you feel hurt, and a lot of things. And there's something that we've got to do to get that compass straightened back out again, and the brochure talks about that, too. So thank you.
Okay. And, Doctor, you had mentioned one.
There are a few. I gave, Doug, you may not have, I just sent it to you prior to us getting on the air, so you may not have seen the email yet. I listed three documentaries and a resource. Denise, I'm sorry, I'm not sure which website I referenced.
Well, it was after I mentioned the website I just found, Operation We're Here.
The equine group that's here up in Chicago is called Bravehearts, and I'm going to pull it up on my screen and see if I can find the exact URL. But I'll mention, I want to go back to what Doug was talking about, because when I pulled up the PDF, the website on trauma, let me get back to it. Sorry, guys. Here it is. The brochure that you have on the neverendingwar.com, the very first thing that popped out at me was the title, was the at the masthead, the top, it says Life After Trauma.
Right.
And that is the message. In three words, that's the message. Because in it, it acknowledges the fact that someone has gone through trauma and that there's life after it, and that's the thing that instills hope in people. And by virtue of the fact that it's written by combat veterans who are leading the way, those two things, giving them hope and being able to relate to their experience in very simple and short terms, is exactly what's needed. Good. Down at the bottom you say veterans helping veterans. There's a reference to that. That's always been the very best way to help veterans, is by other veterans getting the help they need and then reaching back to their brothers and sisters and helping them. Our Healer Warrior Initiative is designed specifically for that, to train veterans how to take better care of themselves, their family members, and other veterans, to pass it along. So our mantra is learn it, do it, teach it, and teach others to teach it. It's training the trainer. And it's no different than what each of you and all of the veterans are taught when you're being prepared to go into combat. The same principles of service and helping one another apply after service.
That's true. Dr. Fields,
I love this brochure.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying I love this brochure. I'm going to steal it and
go right ahead. Put your name on it. I don't care. Just use it as freely as you can.
Yeah.
Veterans to it. But Dr. Phil said one time, a guy on TV, the only difference between you and the people you admire is the choices you made. And if we can get people to make better choices and fewer regrets, it could change their lives. Just by realizing who you hang around has got a lot to do with who you are. And so you have to make better choices, and that's part of the brochure. So it is making a difference, Doctor.
Well, what we're finding is that, you know, it's really popular now because the VA is getting their hands slapped for all of the waiting lists and the scandals that are going on all over the country, and are the whistleblowers are being penalized for telling the truth.
Right.
It happened to all of us here.
Yeah.
And it's easy to get caught up in that. I mean, I can bash the VA with the best of them because I have to deal with it every day. You know, a lot of the guys that I work with only deal with the VA on their own issues. I'm dealing with the VA for all of the guys that we're seeing. You know, and that's hundreds. So I stopped bashing the VA. It doesn't mean I'm not telling the truth, I'm not exposing what's wrong there, but what we found has to happen, in addition to shining the light on the problems of the VA, is you have to have these alternatives. You have to give people other things that they can do. It's not enough just to say the VA is, you know, crappy. That doesn't take much to figure out. But giving people alternatives, and like Ray was saying, you know, finding people who are good role models, people who have been through the battle and have survived, both when deployed and afterwards, these are the fellas that you want to reach out to who can guide you through it. Nobody's doing it alone. Nobody does it alone when they're in combat, and nobody does it alone when they return. So just want to encourage the listeners, the veterans and family members out there, seek out others who have been through it and who can show you the way.
Yeah, and that's critical. The other thing, too, is for all of us, I know Denise and I and Ray did some, too. When we got out of the military and then we went back into academia, whether we either did a regular college degree or others went into vocational training or went into the trades, I mean, you come out and then you got to transition and just make that decision. But then, too, up and beyond that is getting involved in things in your community, whether it's sports activities or theater or the arts. It's keeping yourself busy and keeping involved and charging forward. We're making a contribution that makes you feel good on the inside. At the same time, it helps you heal on the inside.
Well, it does. Part of your stability is just, you know, my wife and I went whitewater rafting up in West Virginia, and it was a number. They had 2 sixes on that river, which they only go to 5. And they told us, they said, unless you paddle, that is part of your stability. You will be thrown out of the raft if you don't paddle, and that does happen. But, you know, you have to put an effort into things because helping other people is tremendous as far as motivation. it makes you want to help somebody else, and then you see somebody else. And so Johnny Brund and I work on a crisis response team. The National Crisis Line called us recently and said, we can't handle these people. Can you do something? And they were in Ohio, and Johnny talked to them, and we were able to intervene in that family and got them help. And it's like, well, who are we? But, you know, it's guys who care. And I'm going to tell you something else, too, Dr. Dolan. Doug, he's been tremendous encouragement to me, and he's just kind of taken me under his wing. And I can't appreciate it, tell you how much I appreciate that, Doug. You've been very patient with me, and I really appreciate all you're doing.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that's the thing, you know, that I had the benefit of. I wasn't in the room where the speech was being given, but it was simulcast. I was at Heinz VA when I saw it, and I think it was actually aired from Lovell VA, where I spend Fridays in their stress unit. And this is a fella, one of only six people who have ever survived jumping off of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow.
And it was just an amazing story. It was, the title of his book is Cracked But Not Broken. And the summation of his entire experience was, we are our brother's keeper. And that was the secret to him surviving. In fact, he's got a pretty good sense of humor, and he said as soon as he left that bridge, he said, oh, shit.
And he hit down.
He hit the water, busted up his spine, was way under the water at the time, and he just looked up, saw the sunlight, and figured that was the direction to start swimming toward. And he finally made it to the surface. And fortunately, someone on the bridge had seen him just as he jumped off, and she called the Coast Guard, and they came out and were able to save his life. And it was service that was the thing that had sustained him and sustains him to this day. And veterans are trained. That's what we say when we thank you guys for your service. And one of the things that happens when guys come back is they lose that sense of service. And serving others, remembering that we are our brother's keeper, is incredibly therapeutic. It's the thing that connects us to one another. And when you lose that, become so self-focused, and you end up in the basement watching, playing video games and isolating yourself, it's a sense of loss that a lot of veterans have when they had such great purpose while they were serving. Then all of a sudden they come home and they can't find a job, and they're having to work at McDonald's, or they're not working at all. Turning around and serving others is one of the very first things that we ask guys to do.
You know, for Denise and I, Jim, and Ray's aware of this, we were so deep on the inside trying to make everything correct when we were in Desert Storm or in the wars or writing this stuff together. And we put the protocols together. We recommended them all the way up to the chain of command, all the way up to the top dog. And then they made the conscious decision to ignore them, resulting in horrible consequences. And then when we spoke up and said, hey, you got to stop this and comply with your own stuff, well, you know, next thing we know is we're the target, you know, to rather them being the target, we're the target.
Right. That's terrible.
Yeah.
It was beyond comprehension.
Well, that's one of the things one of the reasons that we have, and I used to get so frustrated with the VA, and I thought, you know, I'm going to do something, I'm going to change the VA, and in my own little way I've made some inroads, but we've just decided to pluck these guys out of the system to do exactly what you just described, to shine the light on the problems, but also give them alternatives. And the VA is starting to at least talk a good game by a program that they've developed called PC3. It's patient-centered community care. And they're now paying for services outside of the VA that they never paid for before, including acupuncture. So if it's not being done where you guys are, you got to push the envelope, because by law,
if the VA cannot provide the service, then they're mandated. And this has been on the books since 2002. That they're they just didn't tell anybody about it. But they're mandated to provide those services outside of the VA. And now with the VA scandal, they're getting a hell of a lot more pressure. More legislation has been passed to mandate these programs. But it's up to the veterans to push the envelope. So if somebody wants to try acupuncture, you go to your primary care physician and you tell them, I want acupuncture for pain. And the VA, if they cannot provide an acupuncturist in the facility, at the VA facility, they are mandated to provide that service outside the VA and pay for it. And we've been telling veterans to just calmly and quietly begin, and maybe not so quietly sometimes, to begin to demand what's already on the books. And because we quote Abraham Lincoln from his second inaugural address whenever we go out or when we're on shows like yours, Doug. And in his second inaugural address, he said, we are to bind up the wounds of the nation, and we are to care for him who has borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan. And at the time, we did not believe that Lincoln was talking about a VA system or a bureaucratic infrastructure. He was talking to every community at the time to put their arms around the veterans and to care for him who has borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan. It was always designed to be done at the community level. And when we began to centralize it, when we began to put money into these big buildings, we lost that vision. Every one of us, whether we've served or not, is responsible to reach out to veterans right where we live, right in our own communities, and begin to serve them for having served. And we don't think that there's ever going to be a better answer, whether it's at the churches, whether it's talking to the fire department or the police in your community. We're encouraging everyone to reach out and ask their pastors, ask the chief of police, the chief of the fire departments in their local communities, is there a veteran program that I can get involved in? How can I help? And just that community outreach, just putting our arms around the veterans and their family members, is a show of compassion and love that is medicine. So anybody who's within your listening audience, they have a role to play in this, whether they've served or not, to provide that care in their community, because that's what it was designed to do, and I think Lincoln had it right. We are to care for him who has borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan.
Yeah, that's good.
So what else? How else can I help? We'd love to be a resource. We're based here in Chicago. So, you know, what did you say, Doug, 100 and?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm down Champaign, and Denise is in Denver, and Ray is out in Carolina. I mean, yeah. All across the nation here.
Yeah. Well, for you, if guys or gals can get up here, we're happy to help. If one of the things that we've gotten pretty good at is, if anybody across the country is in need, we've done a pretty good job of being able to find those types of healers in their community. I mentioned them earlier, whether it's an acupuncturist, a massage therapist, a chiropractor, anybody who's not knee-jerk giving them medications, those people are connected to a community that has resources. So if people want to call me, I'll do the research in their community. I'll get on the internet. I'll find the people who, and I'll interview them, and I'll ask them what their processes are and their experience is, because I know the right questions to ask. I know the right modalities, if you will, the right remedies to look for. Anybody in the country that's listening, we're happy to help. They can call my cell phone number. My cell phone's on 24/7, much to my wife's chagrin. She's actually kicked me out of the bedroom most of the time because I got the damn thing on all the time. But the number is 630-750-5522. 630-750-5522. People can text or call. I'll pick up the phone, contact the person, and do whatever I can to find the right people right where they live so that they can get the help they need.
Boy, we got another team member here, guys. Denise,
How
long we've been doing this, and Ray, you've been joining us now.
Yeah.
Got referred into by another friend, and that was after a death too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I lost the son of a mutual good friend that Ray and I didn't know each other before, but we found out we ended up knowing. Next thing we know, we're back together because Bill McNeely Jr. died.
That's right, yeah.
Another total waste, an incredible young man, 40-some years old, all the hopes and the dreams, and he didn't get the medical care that we specifically and I specifically asked for him at the Danville VA Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. And his uncle sure did go over there and ask him, too. I can guarantee you that because we were all there.
You know, we talk about I don't feel like I have anything to offer. I don't know if anybody needs my help. I'm telling you, Doug, this thing is huge, and there are people everywhere, these veterans and other people that have been traumatized, and all of them are suffering the same effects and there's the same treatment for them. So we got to get them the right treatment because they're being drugged and they're being put to sleep and they're dying on the side and whatever they're doing is not working, and so we have to take it on ourselves to get busy and get this thing done.
Jim, we got a couple minutes left here before the music comes up. It's all yours to wrap it up, sir.
Well, again, I'll give my number out and extend this to Ray and to Denise.
Thanks.
If there's ever anything that we can do for people that you're in contact with, please feel free to call. Doug's got all of my contact information. And to your listening audience, I'll just simply say there is hope. The things that Ray has talked about, finding veterans who have been through the battle and have survived, reach out to them. Reach out to people in your community. And to others, do the same thing. Reach out to the veterans right where you live.
Thank you, Jim, and God bless you. We're going to have you back again. Can we do that, sir?
Love to have it.
Thank
That'd
you, guys.
Great.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you,
Denise. All of you. Thank you.
God bless.
Hi, Ray.
Bye-bye. Thank you.